It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hope you had a great weekend, everyone. I know if you're in the Northeast, Saturday was hellacious, and Sunday was like spring. Who's going to get sick in that weather? Nobody. We're going to speak to Miles Yu in a matter of moments, Hudson Institute fellow, former China policy advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And then at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to John Eisenberg. John is an acclaimed sports writer, best-selling author of 10 books, including his This Is Likely to Be the Same Thing, Rocket Man, the Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football. We got two starting in the Super Bowl, which we'll be covering, and that'll begin. The coverage will begin on Friday. We'll be traveling on Thursday. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
These numbers really stand out to me, right? 6 in 10 Americans say they would be disappointed or even angry if he wins again. That is more than the just 56% that have a negative response to Trump winning. So the president has to make a compelling argument.
And that was a reporter for ABC. 2024, the obstacles remain for Joe Biden to win another 4 years. Headwinds are coming from the left, as GOP is more comfortable than ever being critical of Donald Trump, who, by the way, beats Biden by 4, the latest poll. Plus, I'll tell you about the changes to the Democratic primary schedule.
Number two.
Do you want him to run again? I mean, you saw our poll. You have a large number of Democrats say they don't want him to run again.
He is an absolutely historically successful president, and I want to see that continue.
Even with terrible polls. State of our Union, a day before the address, what the numbers say and what you think and feel are diametrically opposed. We will look at the numbers and explore why.
Number one.
Letting a Chinese surveillance balloon lazily drift over America is like seeing a robber on your front porch and inviting him in, showing him where you keep your safe, where you keep your guns, where your children sleep at night, and then politely asking him to leave.
Yeah, what a joke. Mike Gallagher weighing in. Blowback on blowing up the China balloon. What they are up to, and why did the Pentagon wait until Saturday to blow it up? Why does the administration evoke Trump every time they get in trouble, saying inexplicably, this happened 3 times under Trump? And when the Trump people said, no, it didn't, they said, well, it happened. We just didn't tell you. I'm not kidding. That's their explanation. Miles Yu joins us now from the Hudson Institute. Miles, great to hear from you again. First off, on China's response, here it is. Instead of apologizing, they say the U.S. used force to attack our civilian unmanned airship, which is an obvious overreaction. We express solemn protests against this move by the U.S. side. The Chinese side has repeatedly informed the U.S. side after verification that the airship is for civilian use and entered the U.S. due to a force majeure. It was a complete accident. Do you buy that explanation? And what about their belligerence in response?
No, I mean, that's a ridiculous response. I mean, it's like a crime boss send a robber in civilian clothes to rob a house. And the police responded, and then the crime boss will say, how dare you use a uniform force to deal with a civilian? I mean, this is just absolutely ridiculous. This is a Chinese, sort of typical Chinese response. They will never admit anything that could be wrong, that's done wrong. And so I think in this case, actually, the result probably is a little bit unexpected. I mean, it's backfire. I mean, this is part of the Chinese design. They always do this before any major summit. They always create some kind of a low-intensity confrontation so that the summit will take place and it look good, and then we'll not end up talking about real substance issue rather than the newly created small crisis. They did this every time, you know, they used to arrest Chinese dissident. So force Americans to address that issue just before the comment.
But they're not even having the meeting. I mean, that's fine, Miles, but the meeting's called off.
The meeting is called off because, you know, there's no way the meeting could proceed when the truth is exposed to the American public. So it will make Biden and Trump look foolish. So if they didn't cancel that.
Right. So in other words, a bad move on their part. Unless they never wanted the summit to begin with, or the military is acting against the administration, against President Xi.
Well, I don't think that's the case. I think this is the Chinese system is so controlled. The top down, so there's no way incidents like this involving dealing with a major country of a severe consequence without the highest order from the highest level. So I don't buy the idea there is some kind of rogue bureaucrat doing something contravailing to the intent of right. Xi Jinping. There's no way.
So let me just, in case everyone was away this weekend, on the 21st, China launches this balloon. On the 28th, it goes into the Lucia Islands right by Alaska. Then it goes off the coast, all the way down the Canadian coast into Montana. On Wednesday, it becomes visible to the Montana residents, including one man who looked up and called a buddy who's a photojournalist. He said, take a picture of this. I don't know what it is. When he takes a picture, sends it to NORAD, NORAD says, we're crafting a statement. My sense is, Miles, they would have not told us anything. They would have had this summit anyway had we not had civilians like you and I not heard about this ahead of time, putting pressure on us. Do you think that would have happened? They would have loved just to ignore this?
I think so. I think, they would not have happened. I mean, the Pentagon came out of saying Thursday, but this fact was known to the American authorities like days before, we should have shut it down the moment it entered the American sovereign airspace in Alaska. So that's a no question asked. This is basically not only a matter of sovereignty. This is the operational espionage device and conducting a surveillance operation it should be stopped at the moment it was detected.
I mean, they stole our F-35 15 years ago, so they now have a stealth air force that we created that they just mirrored. They've stolen personal data with a huge hack in 2015, and we know through TikTok they're getting personal data on a regular basis until we slowly but surely shut it off here. I want to hear, in terms of you saying it should have been shut down earlier, you're not the only one. I think most people are saying it. And Leon Panetta, the former Secretary of Defense for President Obama, Chief of Staff for President Clinton, said this, cut nine.
And I'm not sure that we should have allowed it to simply cross over the country, cross over what were obviously sensitive military sites. I don't see the logic of that. So the question, obviously, is the Pentagon said there were risks here. I understand that argument, there were debris risks. At the same time, I think we should have acted earlier if our suspicions were valid that this was, in fact, on an intelligence mission.
So that's the Secretary of Defense for a Democratic administration say, why did we wait? And you got to wonder, too, is this China one of their goals to create a divide because they know this would be debated on both sides?
Actually, I don't know what China divide and conquer, to fan division in America has always been the primary modus operandi of Chinese propaganda, united front work in the United States. There's no question about that. However, on this issue, I think, this is a public relations disaster for the Biden administration. So they try to make this a partisan issue. Well, in fact, the reaction to the public PR disaster has been unanimous. You mentioned about Leon Panetta. I mean, that's a big, heavy sort of Democrat person. I mean, saying that, I mean, this is all bipartisan. I don't know anybody who have the guts to defend the delay of shooting down. And I think the only thing that the Democrats come up with is that, hey, listen, this happened during the Trump administration, which is basically not true. So this is a really, really sort of a partisan. President Biden have a report card coming up tomorrow, so he has to show this is just a partisan instead of its own incompetence.
And so Miles Yu, he's our guest right now, former China policy advisor to Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. So I don't understand, when you go over Montana, it is so sparsely populated, to Wyoming, so sparsely populated, to South Dakota. I understand you want to be careful, but to say I don't want to shoot it down over land, someone could get hurt. Here is the senator from Montana recommending they shoot it down over Montana. Cut 16.
They could have shot that balloon down, and the biggest risk might have been hitting a cow, a prairie dog, or an antelope.
So don't say the military told the president, I don't want to do that. Don't do it. And we'll do it when it gets over water, saying it's going to get over water. I mean, they were in control of this. They could have kept it on land. And then what would happen? And go ahead.
Listen, this is what shut down over the water of South Carolina, 6 miles offshore. Now, I can guarantee you there were more watercraft, more people there in the water than the people in Montana and North Dakota. So this general argument doesn't wash. What I think there is kind of a dubious good effect on this. That is, I mentioned this was one of the low intensity confrontation with the big stake between the two superpowers. In the old days, we had a name for it. We called it the Cold War. Now there have been for those of us who are in the China business, there's no question Cold War II has been going on for years, years. But for a lot of Americans, they are still in doubt. And this incident, the balloon incident, is a very tangible, physical reminder the war is going on, and there's no question about that. I think this is much, much more educational than many op-eds.
I hope so.
I just hate looking weak, Miles.
I hate looking weak as a country. We pour all this money into defense to get the most sophisticated equipment, and we allow it to be stolen, and then we allow us to be probed constantly. And they said, oh, yeah, that happened 3 times during the Trump years, but we never told the White House. What are they talking about?
I think, you know, the major American ethos is always that we start out as the sucker. You know, we are beaten by the Japanese in Pearl Harbor, but we do have the Rocky Balboa mentality. We will always triumph in the end. So I hope this is sort of a wake-up call to America. And we're facing a threat from China that is unprecedented. And China has the strategic intent to not only beat America physically, but also to replace the world, in the world, with the Chinese communist model of governance. Not only that, China is much more capable than the good old time Soviet Union, because China has a much more advanced technology. And the economic power is unparalleled in comparison to the Soviet Union. And China enjoys also a lot of opportunities it doesn't deserve. China is a full member of the international free trade system. That system has enabled and enriched the Chinese Communist Party, and we should really do something to stop that, stop providing opportunities to Chinese Communist Party that it does not deserve.
So we have the USMCA that you guys signed when you guys were in office. Do you know what China's doing? They're buying up Mexican manufacturing and selling Chinese-made material that said made in Mexico into the U.S., so they are taking advantage of free trade.
Yeah, not only that, made in Mexico fentanyl. I mean, it's actually transferred to Chinese sources and the materials. Even the financing has something to do with the Chinese organized crime orchestrated by the government.
I hear you, Miles. Lastly, just on the Trump situation, John Radcliffe sounded off on this, saying that the Trump administration allowed it to happen 3 times. Cut 15.
Every time something goes wrong in the Biden administration, there's one of two responses. They either find a way to blame the Trump administration, or they try and find a way to say the Trump administration did it too. And that's what they're trying to say here. This happened during the Trump administration. It didn't. And you would have heard about it before.
So I texted Mike Pompeo last night, interviewed him, and then I also texted Robert O'Brien. He said it never happened. John Radcliffe said it never happened. They walked it back and then said it happened undetected. Undetected. Think about this. Undetected. We didn't relay it to the White House, but it happened in Texas and two other places. If you never detected it, why are you telling us it happened? So either you detected it and didn't relay it, or it was legitimately undetected and you made it up.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the Chinese, basically, we have sail through many of the areas, international waters in Western Pacific, particularly the South China Sea and the Taiwan Strait. The China said this is a sovereign domain. We ignore them. So the Chinese said, no, what if we do something similar? Americans say, fine, no, as long as you follow international law. So the Chinese aircraft did come close to the American shore in Alaska a couple of times in conjunction with the joint exercise with Russia. But it did not really penetrate into American sovereign airspace. So that's most likely is something I think likely to happen. But I don't believe. You're right. I mean, if you didn't detect it, how do you know?
So, it's such a joke. So, you know, it was unbelievable. So it's let's see what happens from here, see if the president mentions it tomorrow night. And we have a balloon coming up from Central America. We'll see if we do anything about that or see if it goes off course. Remember, they are steering it. They could bring it anywhere. And they're the ones who were in our face all week. Miles Yu, thanks so much. She's one of the best people to talk to about this. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right. When we come back, your calls, 1-866-408-7669. John Eisenberg at the bottom of the hour. We get ready to go to the Super Bowl. Don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Earlier today, an American fighter jet shot down a suspected Chinese surveillance balloon that had been spotted crossing the United States, officially ending history's most complicated gender reveal party. And bad news for China, it's a girl.
Right, because they don't like girls. I don't think they let girls be born for like 25 years. And you had one child policy. Now they're in a world of hurt, by the way. I'm pro-girls. If you have a girl, I think most Americans are extremely happy. That's one of the things where the rubber hits the road between our two nations. The other big story I'll be going over is what's going on with 2024. It seems the polling's overwhelming. Believe it or not, despite the decent show at the midterms, despite the jobs numbers, these guys do not want Donald Trump. Democrats do not want Joe Biden to be their nominee. I mean, the numbers are astounding. He's got 42% approval rating, according to ABC. 6 in 10 Americans said they'd be disappointed or even angry if he wins again. That is more than just 56% that have a negative response to Trump winning. 67% uncomfortable with him running. 32% are enthusiastic. Can you imagine that? I have never seen that number, 32% enthusiastic about him running again. Why? He's way too old. He has not been on top of things. He makes you really uncomfortable. He's taken over 200 days off since he got the job 2 years ago. Who is off 200 days? The economy? You think people would be happy? 36% approve. 36% approve him economically. Foreign policy, 41%. The war in Ukraine that he's going to take a bow on tonight. Tuesday night. 41% approval rating. So I'll go over some other polls. There's some panic. And guess who we lose to? Donald Trump by 4 points, according to an ABC Washington Post poll. When we come back, we talk a little football, the big game on Sunday. Hundreds of millions will watch. We'll break it down.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I think it's special, and I've learned more and more about the history of the black quarterback since I've been in this league. And the guys that came before me and Jalen set the stage for this. And now I'm just glad that we can kind of set the stage for guys that are kids that are coming up now.
I think it's history. I think it's something that's worthy of being noted. And it is history. You know, it's come a long way. I think there's only been 7 African-American quarterbacks to play in the Super Bowl. So to be the first for some is pretty cool. So I know it'll be a good one.
Absolutely. And that, of course, is Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts. They'll be starting against each other first time in history, 2 black quarterbacks. And it was never It hasn't been a big deal for a while, but it was when it first happened. I think John Gillum was one of the ones with the Pittsburgh Steelers who had a chance to play, and James Harris with the Rams had a chance to play, and Doug Williams with Washington. Then the Redskins, he was playing, and now it's pretty much commonplace. John Eisenberg writes about it in an upcoming book called Rocket Man, The Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football, and John Eisenberg joins us now. John, how significant, it means a lot to them. Does it mean a lot to the NFL to have these two quarterbacks play against each other?
Well, I hope so. Whether it means a lot to the NFL, I mean, you were right in that intro in that it's become more mainstream, much more mainstream than it was when those guys that you mentioned, James Harris and Joe Gillum, you know, back in the 70s, I mean, they were real groundbreakers. There were none before them, really. And so it's been a slow increase, very, very slow over the years. So I think that, yes, I think it's really important. I hope the league feels it's important. I know the players do. And, it's considering the history, which is what I write about in this book, and the obstacles they faced and the slow pace of progress, as great as it is to see this, I mean, it's still a big thing.
Right. I mean, of course, I remember Randall Cunningham was just changing the nature of the position. His older brother, Sam Cunningham, running back on the New England Patriots, and he was just changing the nature of the position. And then he said something in an interview. He says, why is it that when people describe me, they say I'm a great athlete? When they describe white quarterbacks, they always talk about how smart they are. And I thought to myself, I never even thought about it. But if you're a black quarterback, you're thinking about that. Well, he's good because he's elusive, or he can run, right. He can scramble. So did you pick some of that up in your research, that people were saying things that may be racially insensitive?
Oh, absolutely. And it's ongoing. You know, the question of whether it's a big deal now, even though black quarterbacks have become very common. There was an academic study, I believe it was the University of Wisconsin, in 2011 or 12, a pretty recent, that said, yes, this type of language, and this is a couple of academics, traced the language that is used on draft prospects specifically. And they found out exactly that kind of stuff was still going on. The good white prospects were, you know, heady, and less likely to make mental errors, and it was how smart they were, and the black prospects were, you know, great athletes and things like that. And so that sort of broad brush treatment, you know, is a very dangerous thing in any realm, and certainly was the case here.
I remember Warren Moon, one of the great quarterbacks of his generation, had to start in CFL. No one really wanted. They said, this guy's not going to be an NFL quarterback. Well, he lit it up in the CFL, comes back to the NFL, and had a great career with the Oilers, especially. So was that an example of breaking through? He was not a traditional quarterback. He was not a scramble-first guy.
No, Warren Moon is a key figure in my book, and he's actually on the cover, and he was very helpful in the project, I might add. Is glad that this story is being told. And so, yes, he goes undrafted, even though, he had won the Rose Bowl as a senior and it played incredibly well in that game against Michigan. And so, yes, he has to go to Canada for 6 years. And he had to live through, by the way, pre-draft, the pre-draft assessment was, you know, maybe his arm isn't that great. This is a guy that wound up throwing for 50,000 yards. So an incredible talent. And when he comes to the Houston Oilers finally, after being in Canada for 6 years, and by the way, winning five titles in 6 years in the CFL, he is the only black starting quarterback in the NFL. There were none. And so he's a year before Cunningham, and he just was sort of the lodestar for a long time. He and Cunningham, and then Doug Williams, who had been in Tampa for 4 or 5 years. Those are really the only three into like the 1990s. This was the case. And Warren Moon, of course, is eventually enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So just an incredible talent that hard to believe you look back, not even drafted. So it just shows you where the realm was back in the late 70s.
Right. I mean, there's also, there were plenty of black players. They just thought, okay, this player, black players, they'll be defensive backs, they'll be linebackers, they'll be defensive linemen. Mostly white players be offensive linemen. There was this is what it's going to take to win mentality. I don't think necessarily people walking around being racist. There was just a tendency that that's what you do. Did you find that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of a couple things. I mean, certainly in some cases there was racism, but in other cases there was just sort of it was the way it was. I mean, and that was in all levels of football. They just felt like yes, and you know, it was definitely the base, the ground basis of it was a lot of people didn't think, well, they're not smart enough. I mean, blacks were having a hard time finding leadership positions really in any realm. I mean, if you go back and look at the history of CEOs and things like that, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s is the real time when it was hard to break through that ceiling. And then once some of these guys were out there, those guys in particular, it definitely opened the flow of things. You know, there's still these concerns about situations like that. And going back to that language we talked about earlier, you know, can they be leaders? Right. Can they run an offense? And, you know, it's changed. But, boy, it was very slow in coming.
And by the way, talking to John Eisenberg, he's got a book coming out called Rocket Men, The Black Quarterbacks Who Revolutionized Pro Football. And, of course, two black quarterbacks starting in this game and really respected around the league as people and obviously as great players. This is a new generation they're actually pioneering. Think about, too, John, I know you have, how many quarterbacks that would have been that got converted. Oh, you might have been a quarterback in college, not here. You're going to be a defensive back. Or you're going to play a different position.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I will say I chronicle a number of these stories in the book. If you go back and look, it's really the generations of 60s, the 70s, the 80s. You know, there was a guy, if you want to go way back, there was a guy, Sandy Stevens. This is going back in history. One was the first black All-American quarterback in major college football at the University of Minnesota, led them to a national title, led them to two Rose Bowls, and one of which he won, and just a great player. And he never took a snap in the NFL. As a quarterback, and he had to go to Canada, and they eventually made him a running back, and it just never got the benefit of the doubt. And this is a guy you can't have really a better college career, and so there are a number of those guys over the years, generation after generation of it. It's really, really sad because there's so many guys. There's no doubt if you throw the full force of an organization behind a guy, like say for instance Lamar Jackson today with the Baltimore Ravens. Sort of an unusual skill set, but they throw the support of the organization behind him and look what happens, you know, great success. There's no doubt there are plenty of guys through the years, excuse me, where that could have been the case, but they just didn't get the opportunity.
Right. And that's why your book is going to be so important. And that's why this Sunday will be so historic. Soon it'll be, who's my quarterback? I don't see black or white. You just see styles. You can't say white people are pocket passers and blacks like to run. You can't make those universal statements. They're just quarterbacks. And now there's so much at stake. If a coach or a GM says, I'm not going to draft him because he's black or white or Asian, but yet they can help me win, they're not going to have a job for too long.
Oh, well, that's absolutely true. I mean, you know, anybody that takes any sort of calculus, anything other than who's the best player, they are going to be out of the league. They're going to be losing games. And one thing that's really important to understand that was sort of the final straw in this was the NFL football in itself changed for so long. They just wanted these pocket passers, drop back quarterbacks. And that denied, you know, some of the, they didn't really even want mobile quarterbacks. It was a game of pocket passers. And this is something I detailed in the book and it really doesn't change for good until Cam Newton comes along and Robert Griffin and Kaepernick early in his career, unbelievable talent. And guys like that, Russell Wilson, guys that, and suddenly it came from college football up to the pros. And slowly the pros realized, hey, you know, maybe it's good if we have a guy that if they're getting ready to sack him, he runs around and, you know, can make something happen. And that's really one of the main changes in the quarterback position in the NFL took place really around 2010, and certainly is the case today with a lot of these sort of, you know, different types of offenses and running quarterbacks or quarterbacks who are good runners. So that was a huge change that took place. And so NFL is different. The football is different now, and I that's really been helpful to the black quarterbacks.
Yep. John Eisenberg, best of luck with the book. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
You got it. Of course, I'll be out there. The show is going to be out there Friday. And we'll be back to recap all the action on Monday in Arizona. All right, when we come back, I'll take your calls. 1-866-408-7669. Also, who is the governor that said Donald, Republican governor, that said Donald Trump can't beat Joe Biden? I'll tell you who. I'll let you hear what he had to say when we come back.
For the first time ever, two brothers will be facing off against each other in the Super Bowl. Incidentally, two brothers in the Super Bowl is why my grandfather won't be watching.
Oh, February, man. Wow.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You saw what our poll said about Trump, Biden. You think Donald Trump can beat Biden?
No. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, November of 22 showed us that, right? Trump is going to be seen as a very extreme candidate. The country's going to push back against it. If we just look at the results of 3 months ago, and that shows you where extreme candidates are going to end up falling. It can't get done. He could get the nomination, but he can't get done. And what I try to espouse to Republicans is, look, we want to vote for the most conservative candidate that can win in November and get stuff done in 25.
Governor Kristi Noem making it clear that he would support Trump if he got the nomination, but he doesn't think he can beat Joe Biden, even though he's trailing by four. And one of the main reasons that Joe Biden stays in it, the Democratic school of thought was because they know he could beat Donald Trump. Without a pandemic, Joe Biden loses by about 20 points. I think he gets crushed. Without a pandemic, he gets crushed by Trump. So I think it was all about the circumstances, how you handle it, the perilous times in which it was taking place. So Chris Christie weighed in, too, about the same thing with 2024. Cut 26.
Here's the problem. Politicians, when they run for office, you don't always win. Sometimes the other guy loses. Joe Biden's president because Donald Trump lost. Joe Biden didn't win. And Joe Biden's never taken possession of that fact. And so he continues to do what he did when he was running, which he thinks was great because I won. No, you didn't win. Trump lost. And you can't change who somebody is, John. In the end, Joe Biden is not an exciting candidate. He's old. He's boring. And the American people are not relating to him. And that's why those numbers are the way they are. That was the same in 2020, but he's running against someone who was so toxic that he won anyway.
Well, that person did get 71 million votes, but he lost Georgia, lost Arizona, and didn't pull off Wisconsin, where he did the first time. But I do think that Joe Biden was a worse candidate who has no energy but wasn't allowed to leave his basement. It was the perfect storm for him to win. And you look at the midterms, what he did is he played the Trump card, the mega principle, that mega Republican, different from your father's Republican Party. They keep on tapping into it. They get in panic about what's going on with the balloon. They look so weak. Donald Trump looked the same way. Donald Trump had the same problem. So they are looking, they think they have it with Trump. So if Trump won, 83% of Republicans would be happy. If Biden won, 78% of Democrats would be happy. With 6 in 10 Americans believe the economy condition is bad, 76% say they worry about inflation the most. So tomorrow night, the president's going to bring up how great the economy is. What I think he should understand and someone should explain to him is the American people don't agree. So that is what this poll numbers on CBS and ABC really dominated this weekend. Here's Mary Bruce, an ABC senior White House correspondent. Cut 23.
Tuesday is a good opportunity for a soft launch, right? He hasn't made it official, but yeah, this is a chance for him to really outline the argument for him to have another 4 years. We know what to expect here, right? He's going to argue that the economy is strong, based especially off of the latest jobs numbers. He's going to say he deserves credit for that and make the case that he deserves another 4 years to continue it. The problem is that message hasn't been resonating. I mean, right, look at the poll. 4 in 10 Americans say that the economy isn't helping out. They feel worse off now than they did when he started. And the poll also shows that Americans just aren't feeling him, right? They aren't feeling the effects of any economic growth in their wallet, but they also aren't enthusiastic about him. And that's a real problem.
And here's what it could be. If the polls are down and the economy is going to slow down at the very least. I don't like to say recession because some people can will it and too many people get hurt when they do it. But something's wrong with those numbers. I can't believe how many major corporations from Goldman Sachs to Google to Walmart to Twitter, obviously, to Facebook, laying thousands of people off to Amazon, And then we added 512,000 jobs. So if you're going to come out and he's got to go win it, he's got to go get four more years. How did he do it? Barack Obama, how did he win? He made Mitt Romney the story. Mitt Romney's unelectable. He's a rich white guy who will destroy the country and only be for rich white guys. So they had to make him a cartoon. The guy that's not capable of doing that is Joe Biden, because Joe Biden does not have the energy. As Chris Christie brought up, do you actually see Joe Biden crisscrossing the country? Cut 27.
He is not capable of running a traditional American race. And what he had in 20 was a gift. He had Donald Trump, who was toxic, and he had a pandemic which prevented him from having to go out and speak every day.
That was true. I think Chris Christie's overstating it. Donald Trump wasn't toxic. He was polarizing. What he lost was female, women, soccer moms. He lost those suburban moms that were so valuable to his first one. He lost the female vote. He picked up a lot of Hispanic votes. He picks up some black votes, but he lost in key areas. And we also know what was working against him. Every social media outlet working against him. The Zuckerbucks target marketing the districts, which was so vital to flip a state. Millions upon millions of dollars. We know every media outlet. We know the NRA was investigated suddenly by New York State. We know the Drudge Report was bought by a mysterious outlet who suddenly became as anti-Trump as any outlet, period. We know that Brad Parscale, the key to his ingenious social media marketing campaign, seemed to melt down in the middle. You know, we find him naked without a shirt on, wife claiming that something else happened bad there. These are all key aspects of how that stopped Trump, who still got 71 million votes. Now, I think he's going to have a heck of a time getting the nomination. And I don't love the fact that he was asked by Hugh Hewitt, if you don't get the nomination, will you support the Republican? Really? He said, I don't know. I don't know. Of course you got to support the Republican. The alternative is terrible for the country. That's the attitude that had you lose Georgia in 2020. You didn't care about the runoffs in the Georgia election. That fed into Purdue losing, and that fell into Kelly Loeffler losing. The president didn't put his energy here, never lost the election, took aim at the sitting governor and the secretary of Georgia State. So that's not a great attitude. But if the president can start doing some of these things, that might change the perception. But right now, he's leading.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. I come to you from 48th and 6th, Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world, of course. If you're in the Northeast, it was zero or minus 5. Or if you're in the mountains, minus 100 degrees or something like that. They shut down ski slopes on Saturday. On Sunday, it was about 50. Listen, I'm not complaining. I'm just pointing out. Now, normally they would say, there goes global warming, but we don't use global warming, climate change. So anytime the weather changes, it's more proof that we're destroying the place. We have to stop with our gas ovens. More on that later. This hour, we're going to be joined by Dara Torres, the Olympic legend swimmer. Janice Dean's going to be in here. We've got a big special coming up on Wednesday night, the demise that was chronicled by my next guest, Michael Goodwin, of Governor Cuomo, her role in that. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
These numbers really stand out to me, right? 6 in 10 Americans say they would be disappointed or even angry if he wins again. That is more than the just 56% that have a negative response to Trump winning. So the president has to make a compelling argument.
Right. At the State of the Union and with his reelection, nobody's excited. 2024, the obstacles remain for Joe Biden to win another 4 years, and headwinds are coming from the left. GOPers are more comfortable than ever being critical of Donald Trump. That's coming from the right, who, by the way, beats Biden by 4 points in the latest ABC poll. Plus, I'll tell you about the changes in the primary process.
Number two.
Do you want him to run again? I mean, you saw our poll. A large number of Democrats say they don't want him to run again.
He is an absolutely historically successful president, and I want to see that continue.
Really? You're the one. State of the Union, a day before the address, what the numbers say, what you think and feel are diametrically opposed to what the president's saying is going on with our economy. We will look at the numbers and explore.
Number one.
Letting a Chinese surveillance balloon lazily drift over America is like seeing a robber on your front porch and inviting him in, showing him where you keep your safe, where you keep your guns, where your children sleep at night, and then politely asking him to leave.
Right. Blowback on blowing up the Chinese bubble. Balloon, I should say. What they were up to, and why did the Pentagon wait until Saturday to blow it up when they were told to blow it up and could have blown it up a week ago? Why does this administration invoke Trump every time they get in trouble? With me right now is Michael Goodwin. Michael, put in perspective the journey of the balloon and the explosion which took place. I thought it was way too long. They should have stopped in Alaska. Never would have reported it if a local reporter in Billings, Montana, didn't say he sighted it and get a photojournalist to picture it. So what do you think about these events as they unfolded?
Well, look, Brian, I think that there's no way to spin this other than this was something of a taunt by China against the United States. And for the Biden administration to sort of sit there for the better part of 4 days while it's visible to the country and there are photographs of it everywhere is pretty remarkable. When, you know, it doesn't get more, I think, in your face than that. And look, we don't want to get into a war out of a kind of, you know, macho contest, but there is a kind of international law about not a law per se, but a law in the sense of how you conduct yourselves and what is expected of your opponents. And I think if I'm China, I'm thinking, well, that went over well. I mean, they let it happen, and then he shoots it down finally, and there's all kinds of criticism. So America looks not only weak but divided. And so if I'm China, I'm thinking, well, that's one for us. And if I'm Taiwan, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, we're going to count on America to come to our rescue when China can do that in America's own territory. So I think it was in a geopolitical sense, it was a huge statement by China and a very weak and belated response by America, which means China takes from this a go sign on aggression wherever it pleases.
I just thought one thing, it didn't work to their advantage. If they were making overtures over the last few weeks that they wanted to have a reset with the administration. And then they do this, and they continue. By the way, everyone discounts. It's not a wayward balloon. They were still steering it right through all our military sites, through Montana, where there's 520 nuclear silos. It is insane. Listen to Mike Turner. Mike Turner is also on the Intelligence Committee. Cut 7.
The key, obviously, is not just the balloon. The key is the payload that was attached to it, which you've reported is, you know, the size of three buses. That's obviously huge. And it was being commanded and controlled by mainland China and delivering data and information back to mainland China. Again, if you look at the path and you put X's where all of our sensitive missile defense and nuclear weapons facilities are, I believe that they were trying to gain information on how to defeat the command and control of our nuclear weapons systems and our missile defense systems. That's a crisis. That certainly should have had an urgency to the president and not just wait until this gets to the Atlantic to take it down.
Right. So obviously they're going to be briefed, but the bottom line is they quickly pivot to blaming Trump. They said Trump had this happen 3 times. The problem is they didn't. So Pompeo, Robert O'Brien, John Ratcliffe go, no, we have no record of this. The president, former president, we have no record of this. Then they walk it back and then they come back and say, well, there were breaches. We didn't tell the administration. Is that the worst explanation ever? If it is true, if it isn't true, it's even more diabolical.
I agree, Brian, and once again, no matter how you slice this, it makes America look weak. And, you know, on this level, before a shot is fired, that's a huge advantage in the strategic games of geopolitics, that you have a country that looks weak. You have another country that looks bold and aggressive and not fearful. Look, I'm sure we're doing lots of things to spy on China as well. But this in-your-face thing, done where the public can see it, I think is got to be rattling nerves in Washington, because you invite more of it. And I think that's the lesson that will come of this. And you know, talk about our allies around the world. Without the United States, what is NATO, really? What do our Asian allies, Japan, South Korea, et cetera, what do they really have by way of defense without America? Look at the Mideast. I mean, Israel is a strong military. But what about our other allies there, the Arab countries, the Gulf countries? What are they without our ultimate umbrella? So I think this is an important moment, not just with China-American relations, but how does Russia view this, right? What did they take? What did Iran take from this? And then, of course, what are our allies? I think this is going to reverberate for a long time. And, of course, look, Brian, you and I have talked many times. I've written, you've talked about, you know, the issue of Joe Biden being compromised with China. It's inescapable at this moment to wonder if his sign right. of weakness is in some way a reflection of the guilt. Don't forget it. Xi Jinping knows all about the Hunter Biden payments, knows how much role Joe Biden was playing, knows what private communications were from the Biden family, as Hunter often said, the Biden family, when his father was vice president. I mean, Joe Biden took Hunter Biden to China, where Hunter Biden scored a $1.5 billion investment from a Chinese bank. Do you think Xi Jinping doesn't know about that? Do you think that he doesn't know the terms of that? Did he and Joe Biden discuss it?
Right.
I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Well, let's just say we know one thing. They would not have blown up that balloon had that Montana photojournalist and I took a picture and called NORAD. Then,
well, that's the thing.
Then we flew up a drone next to it and we showed you exactly where the balloon was going. We put the pressure on. And then he turns around. If this is reports true, he turns around Wednesday and he says, blow up the balloon. And the Milley tells him and Austin tell him, no, it's too dangerous. We're going to wait to get it over water. What? Too dangerous? This is big sky country. There's no people. What do you mean it's too dangerous? Then they go to South Dakota. Then they go to Wyoming, the most open land in the country. And he says it's too dangerous. I don't understand where he comes from on that. And by the way, since when does the military push back on the president? Because we heard it was the president alone that recommended we get out of Afghanistan the way we did. And then they all testify that he wouldn't listen to us when we told him what a disaster would be had we left and took all our took everything with us. Listen to Steve Daines, a Montana senator, on the risk to his people. Cut 16.
They could have shot that balloon down, and the biggest risk might have been hitting a cow, a prairie dog, or an antelope.
And yet, his Secretary of Defense said it was too risky.
Look, Mark Milley scares me as a leader of our military. He, you know, his conduct with Trump, calling the Chinese, you know, to warn them that Trump wanted to attack. I mean, I don't know how that guy keeps his job. I mean, I guess that's how. All you have to do is criticize Trump, and you're good enough to go. But the other part, Brian, too, about secrecy, they supposedly were keeping it secret because they didn't want to interfere with Blinken's visit to China. Now, again, if you're China, you think, wow, they think this is so important that they're willing to let us spy on their country in order to have a meeting with the Secretary of State. And as Fox was reporting over the weekend, I was watching some of the guests. What was the purpose of Blinken's trip? What? I mean, is he going there hat in hand? I mean, what is he going to say to him? Please take down your balloons. You're embarrassing us. I mean, it's just there's so many questions about America's posture now under Joe Biden internationally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it begs the mind, it begs belief that we are in a strong position. We just look weak. And that is, you know, as we all know, that is the thing that gets you stuck in a war, not strength, but weakness.
I just want to talk about Biden real quick. You had a great column. I like to talk to you at a different time when we get this balloon thing handled, about the trust in media and how they blew it 7 years ago with the whole Russia investigation. But I just want you to weigh in. Now, Joe Biden's going to have his State of the Union tomorrow, and then he's going to officially make his reelection known. I can't believe 32% of Democrats are excited that he's going to run, enthusiastic. 67% would be angry. 67% would be angry if he did win. This to me is, it defies what happened at the midterms, where it was basically a standstill, anything but a red wave. So I would thought Chris Sununu, a lot of people also were going at President Trump, who has a would win by 4 points overall in the latest ABC poll. Listen to what Chris Sununu said about Trump if he was to win again, if he was to run again. And tell me if you buy into it. Here he is. Where is this? Here it is. Cut 25.
You saw what our poll said about Trump, Biden. You think Donald Trump can beat Biden?
No. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, November of 22 showed us that, right? Trump is going to be seen as a very extreme candidate. The country's going to push back against it.
So what is your reaction to that?
I tend to think it's right now. Well, things can change. But, Brian, I believe Donald Trump cannot win over, so far has not won over, swing voters in swing states. I think that is the lesson of November 22, when the Herschel Walkers, the Kari Lakes in Nevada and Pennsylvania, he just cannot pull across those people because, as you and I have discussed, because of this insistence that they agree the 2020 election was stolen and Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. That's the burden that he put on these candidates. And when you put that burden on them, the swing voters, for a number of reasons, not just one reason, but I think they say, look, it's the past. I want to know what about the future. And it turns enough people off that all of those candidates lost. And right now you have, as a result, the Democrats controlling the Senate and a very narrow margin in the House. And unless Trump starts to sing a different tune and looks forward instead of backwards, I think it's going to be very hard for him to win a general election.
Right. Although Joe Biden running around the country with a great message, which is anything but anti-Trump, would be a tough sell too. It's just amazing to see Democrats sour on him.
I think both parties do not want Trump or Biden. I mean, I think that's the message so far. It's amazing if there is a rematch of those two. It would be against the will of what seems to be a majority of both parties.
Michael Goodwin, thanks so much. Always appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
All right, you got it. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back and take your calls. And then at the bottom of the hour, take your calls, bottom of the hour, Janice Dean, then Dara Torres, 5-time Olympian, 12-time Olympic medalist. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go out to the phones where Tom is listening on Long Island. Hey, Tom.
Brian, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
Brian, I was just telling Peter, I'm glad that I finally heard somebody bring up the simple fact that the Pentagon couldn't stop Biden from emptying Afghanistan out and leaving billions of dollars of equipment there. Couldn't stop them, no matter how bad that was going to be. But this one, I'm going to listen to the Pentagon. It's a freaking balloon.
It's unbelievable. Okay? I mean, how risk averse. This is the Pentagon. Usually you would think by caricature, the Pentagon would need to be reined in by a very, you know, cerebral administration. Instead, you have a Pentagon. We give them billions of dollars. They don't want to do anything, except for crack down on gender abuse or redo the curriculum at Annapolis and West Point.
Well, frankly speaking, to get to the point, I think this was all done as a scam to complacency of the American public. Okay? Oh, don't worry about it. That mission was completed by China. It went from one end of this country to the other, looked up every missile base we have. And finally what happens is, after they get all the information, they sink it in the ocean, which no one, no citizen, police force, fire department, anyone, if it was shot over the continental United States, could look at it. Falls in the ocean. There's only a few, choice few, that are going to be able to pick that up. And you're never going to hear what was on that thing. Clearly, you could see, they have an antenna. It's the size of a bus. Okay? It could go all around the world.
I hear you. I do think the American people are going to force both sides to get tougher on China. 82% of the American people look at China as an enemy. And that would bring both sides together. And I'm encouraged that the House has Democrats on that China Select Committee. So I think that's pretty awesome, that subcommittee headed up by Mike Gallagher. So my fingers are crossed we woke up now.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, with me in studio, Janice Dean, Fox News' senior meteorologist and New York Times bestselling author. Her book is now out, I Am the Storm, Inspiring Stories of People Who Fight Against Overwhelming Odds, and host of the Janice Dean podcast. But Janice, you're not only talking about your book, you also have a special coming out.
Coming out on Wednesday with Fox Nation. It is I Am the Storm, and it's interviews that I did in the book, but in person with some of the chapters that I've focused on.
So it drops on Wednesday.
It does. It drops.
It drops.
I've seen it. It's really unbelievable.
Right. And you got to get another reason to get the Fox Nation app. And basically with I Am the Storm, it starts with you taking on Governor Cuomo. But that fight's not over.
Oh, gosh, no. We're still going at it. I'm about to release an op-ed very shortly that connects the dots between the USS Comfort and the Javits Center and the Cuomo administration and why they didn't put COVID positive patients
in there.
They
were totally empty, right?
Oh, yeah. But I have an email exchange that might not surprise people, but it might infuriate people, including families like mine who were dumbfounded that they put over 9,000 COVID positive patients into nursing homes without testing them when they had federal facilities provided by the government.
Right. Would you remind everybody what they had? They had a cruise ship.
Yes. And the Javits Center. Together, over 4,000 beds were available. Yeah.
It was interesting because—
And it went unused.
Gavin Newsom used it, didn't he? He got the Mercy ship. I think he actually put people in those ships.
Well, he had the same executive order, but it wasn't in effect for as long as Cuomo's was, which was 46 days. Was that your phone?
Yeah, it looks like I have a sports update. it said, could a dark horse win the MVP?
See, if I did that, like I put my phone way over there and I turned it off. If I came in here and all of a sudden I'm getting phone calls from my mom or my husband.
Well, that was a Fox Sports alert. So I feel like it was in the family.
So what does it say that's so important?
Nothing, really. It said a dark horse could win the MVP.
Oh.
Right.
And what does that mean?
Nothing important.
But who is the dark horse?
Well, that was just when you say a dark horse, that means somebody
unexpected.
Yeah,
it's like against all odds.
Yeah, somebody unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Which is what my book, I Am the Storm, is about.
So that helps. So the whole alert really helped you.
It kind of does because it brings it full circle.
Right. So who is on your special?
Ron Kim, who is the assemblyman, still in office, the Democratic, wonderful friend of mine that had an uncle that died in a nursing home, was one of the first whistleblowers to let people know that they were shutting nursing homes and not telling us what was going on in there, including putting thousands of COVID positive patients in there, and really went up against his own party and the Cuomo machine while they were threatening him. So him, I also interviewed Lindsay Boylan. She was one of the first whistleblowers who said that he wasn't a nice guy and he also put his hands on her in the chambers. And then I also have an interview with Andrea Orris, who is a gymnast who has a unbelievable story as she was a young gymnast and one of the coaches that was coaching her, and how she's trying to change the gymnastics world by being a better coach and teaching with kindness. They also have Kenny Specht, who is an FDNY firefighter, who was one of the first to piece together being down at Ground Zero and his cancer that he got from being there.
So one of I didn't get permission to say this on radio, but one of the people we both know from the state capital of Albany said that one thing about Governor Cuomo, when he's gone, he's gone. And I go, why don't you think he'll make a comeback? He goes, he has no friends. He says, even in the Democratic circles, he's hated in Democratic circles because he's such a bully.
Well, he is, but I hear him on certain radio stations trying to make a comeback. He's got a podcast. So there are people, I think, that are still afraid of him.
Well, you could have a podcast. I mean, people might think you can get a sponsor, so you'll get a podcast.
Yeah.
And he does have experience as a politician. The other thing is Chris Cuomo and going after Sid Rosenberg.
Terrible. So have you talked to Sid about this?
That's all I do. We talk about this.
What a bully. He's just a bully.
Chris Cuomo says, I hear you talking about my brother. Do you want to fight for charity?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, what's he talking about?
It's the only way he's going to get press. He's on that television station that has maybe five viewers.
Right.
So I guess he's trying to use his bullying tactics and his incredible muscle to go up against a beloved figure in New York radio.
Who's number one in the morning.
Yeah. Sid's hilarious. I love him so much.
Right.
I think he should do it because I think he'd punch him out.
Right. But, I mean, should we at this age be...
No, you're right.
...be fighting in the hallways?
It's just like, how old are you, Chris Cuomo, with your stupid... You know, do you remember when Tucker Carlson used, like a video in a loop showing Chris Cuomo you know, lifting his weights and thinking he's, like, a tough guy? That's all he thinks he is. That's all he's got.
Right. Well, I guess we'll see. I'm just saying.
Would you tune in? Would you pay to see that?
No, I don't want Sid to do it. I think because Sid's doing great. Why would he lower himself
to that?
Yeah, to do it. I mean, it's to me, if you're trying to establish yourself, you're stuck somewhere in Wyoming and Chris Cuomo calls you out. You think to yourself, this could be my big break.
Right.
I'll come to New York and beat up a Cuomo. But for Sid, he's riding high. I wouldn't.
He is, exactly. But I think he should still talk about it because it's just yet another example of those Cuomo brothers being bullies.
Right, and that would be good. That could.
Would go and I would wear a Weather Bitch T-shirt.
Because
Chris Cuomo apparently called me the Weather Bitch when I was going after his brother.
All right, so tell me about the problems that people, if they have getting this book. It's selling so well that the people can't keep it in stores, but people have to continue to order it.
You're silver lining, man. I love that. They've had some problems getting it into the stores. We really don't know why. And I love my fans on social media because they have gone into stores and they've come back to report to me whether or not the book is there.
Right.
And it usually isn't, so they order it online. So you can order it online. At Amazon and where it's very hard to actually go into a bookstore and find it.
Right, but you should place the order there because they will order. They'll order anything.
I know, but Brian, it's a best-selling book that you can't find in stores.
It's weird.
It is.
But you know who's good at that? Apple. Apple will invent the iPhone and they only make three. And then they're like, listen, I can't get it. I have to wait a year to get it.
Is that what it is? That's where we should spin it.
Right.
It's like you can't get into stores because it is so popular.
Right. I remember Madonna wrote that sex book, right? And she and they wrapped it up.
Did you ever see that?
No, I never saw it. But
I do remember
that. By the way,
I
hear Madonna looks totally different now.
Oh, my gosh. She was on the Grammys last night.
Right.
Listen, I love Madonna. Her. She's 64 years old. Embrace that, girlfriend. But she looks completely different. And it makes me sad because I want to age gracefully. I do. I want to be one of those people that doesn't have to do all this kind of work.
And you think Madonna's going to pressure you to do this work?
Is she going to pressure me?
Yeah, that's
no, she looks like an alien. I don't want to go anywhere near whatever she's doing.
People were tweeting out that didn't even recognize her.
No, it's so sad, Brian.
Right.
Because she was a beautiful woman and she's just looks
maybe it's
different.
Isn't it the Botox that like floats out of you?
It's not Botox though.
It is.
It's plastic.
Right.
You know, remember that woman, Jocelyn Weinstein?
Sure.
She's looking like her.
Wow. Could that be an addiction? People talk about
it. I think it is. I really do. I think she just you know, feels like she has to keep doing right. this stuff.
Do you think that do you fear that I'll become so big that when people offer me advice, I'll feel like they'll be afraid to offer me advice?
But you don't have to. Guys don't do that. Well, I won't say that because there are some men that go through some of that stuff.
Right.
But you are aging gracefully and you look very handsome.
Right. Would you tell me if I started injecting myself and it starts looking worse?
I would.
Right.
I actually
You don't
would.
Think I'm too
but
big a star to that. Approach that?
I know you won't do that because I know you as a person.
What if I started taking steroids to look more like...
like Chris Cuomo?
Well, yes. Or like Sid. Sid's kind of a bulky guy. We got to get to
Sid,
the bottom of
it. I have to tell Sid that he has to stop the tanning.
Why?
Because it's dangerous.
No, he looks
Sid,
fine.
If you're listening
Maybe
right now...
Maybe it's spray on.
No, he's told me he goes to the tanning salon. He can't stop. He's told me it's an addiction. But that's why I love him, too, is because he admits these things.
Right. Okay. He admits he's fallible.
Right. Yes. But I know that, you know, you won't go down that Madonna road.
Right. But if we want to watch your special beginning
yes,
Wednesday.
Yes, Wednesday. It drops. Now, what happens? Is it like midnight that it comes on? I'm not sure.
No, it'll come on right away. Like when you wake up. Whenever you wake up, it's there.
Okay.
And then, of course, get the book. Be patient. I Am the Storm.
Yes, it's called I Am the Storm. You won't be disappointed.
Janice Dean, thanks so much.
I love you.
All right, and I love you back. Coming up next, Dara Torres. She won more Olympic medals than even Janice Dean. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right. Dara Torres is in studio. If you're smart enough to get Fox Nation, you see her, you recognize her. 5-time Olympian, 12-time Olympic medalist, New York Times bestselling author. I'm talking about 4 golds, 4 silver, 4 bronze. She doesn't travel with them because she knows she won them. Dara, welcome back.
Wait, don't you know me well enough that you should, like, have this by heart?
I apologize.
I should have memorized it. Like, come on. You don't even have to memorize it. We've known each other how many years?
We've known each other probably since 1993.
Right.
Right, 1993.
Yeah.
Right. So, that's when you were, like, I think you were just off your first Olympics. When was your first Olympics?
No, that was after 3 Olympics. My first was 84. Oh, my God.
84,
you should have done your homework.
I know, I should have. No, but, I mean, this is, and then you just kept going.
Yes, I kind of did. I took some breaks here and there, but kind of kept going. Yeah.
But, you, I mean, right now, if people aren't don't have the Fox Nation app, you are in incredible shape. What are you doing now?
You know, a little TRX, a little Pilates.
TRX works?
Yeah, TRX and Solid Core. I just came from a Solid Core class. They have them all over
what is that?
New York City. It's a workout where you're on a Megaformer, which is like a Pilates machine. And it's just basically every exercise you do, you're incorporating your core. So
do you do it by yourself? You have to do it in a class?
No, it's a class. Look, I'm like, you know, I've always been told what to do my whole entire life. So when I go to a gym, I'm like, huh, what am I going to do? You know, and so I do much better when someone's coaching me.
So you need a one-on-one.
It doesn't have to be one-on-one. It's just a class is fine, too, just as long as someone's telling me what to do.
So now the one thing I want to get to Brady's retirement and everything, but just you don't do anything that is not – totally with your lifestyle. So tell me what Can I Wellness is.
So Can I Wellness. So I love Can I Wellness. It's a supplement company that tries to give us a way to be like faster and energize and recover and relax and sleep. And it's an awesome brand. And they're actually sprays. I brought some to show you.
It's sprays?
They're sprays. Yes. Yeah, sprays work much better like than say gummies or, you know, putting a pill in your mouth. They're easy to use. They're fast acting. They work about 3 to 9 times
you
faster.
You spray it in your mouth.
You spray it in your mouth under your tongue and you let it sit there for a few seconds and
gives
it works.
You energy?
Yes. Yeah, so Can I Boost is the energy one, which is awesome because sometimes in the morning, instead of like drinking like cups of coffee, you can just have a little boost and you start your day. I especially love Can I Sleep because, you know, as you get older, you get a little more like you're tired during the day, but then when you want to go to sleep, you can't fall asleep. And so it helps you fall asleep. And then some people actually when they get up in the middle of the night and then they can't fall back asleep, but you take a few sprays and you know exactly how much, you know, you're putting in your mouth and you wake up not tired, which is like huge.
How did you get a hold of it? How did you even find out about this?
Well, I've had many knee surgeries. You know, I've had lots of surgeries from all my training and stuff, but I had many knee surgeries and I accidentally, after a knee surgery, had fallen and tore my quad off my bone. And I was having I hate taking any kind of, you know, narcotics or anything like that. And they always give you pain pills after a surgery. And they just, I don't know, they just make me feel nauseous and just not myself. And so I had a friend who was working with Can I Brands and Can I Wellness, and he had mentioned about using Can I Mend for recovery. And I was like, look, at this point, I'll take anything because this pain is so awful. I've never had pain like this after a surgery. And so I started using the Can I Mend, and I was like, wow, this is great. And so I reached out to the CEO and asked if there's any way I can, like, maybe help out or be a part of it. So they made me chief wellness officer.
How great is that, that you see a product and you say, I could, this is something I can get behind?
Well, yeah, exactly, because, you know, a lot of people out there will
get behind it,
and they never use it or they don't like it, you know. And this is something I'm really just I love, and it works. And why not be a part of something that works?
So when your last Olympics was at what age?
I was 41 in 2008, although I tried for 2012 at 45 and missed the team by 9/100ths of a second.
Wow. So 41. So when Brady retires, you're one of the few people that says, I know why he kept playing. I know the sacrifice you have to make and probably why he ended up quitting. What do you sacrifice in terms of personal life when you are trying to compete at a high level?
Well, you know, first of all, I mean, kudos to Brady. He's finally retiring. And I can only imagine how hard that was for him, because you think about it, that's more than half his life is football. And that's what he knows. And he had to sacrifice a lot. And you know, trying not to put football first, especially when you've already started a family. And, you know, who knows what happened in and out of his relationship and what's happened. But, you know, it's you sacrifice, you know, your family, you sacrifice, you know, time. There's so many things you sacrifice. But, you know, it's who he is. You know, it's how he identifies. So,
which is going to be crazy, because now does that change?
Yes, it does. So for me, it was about trying to find something to satisfy you after all you know is like competition and trying to win and stuff. And so I think for him, it's probably spending more time with his family. Like for me, with my daughter, Tessa, I started to become more involved. Not that I wasn't an involved parent, not that he's not either, but you have different time now for your family that you, and look, he signed a contract, so he's going to be busy at some point, you know, doing TV work and stuff. So he'll still be associated to it in a different capacity. And I think that will be good for him too.
Right. But if you identify through your sport, that's a lot of time you see with boxers. They keep going back though. Nothing's ever going to mirror that. And I know some boxers, I remember talking to Ray Mancini when he retired. He came back and he said he had to go see a therapist. And the therapist told him, just get used to the fact that nothing in your life will ever be as good as being lightweight champion of the world.
Right.
And judge everything backwards. And I thought, what a negative thing. He goes, no, it was freeing.
Right.
Because now I don't go around every day trying to mirror that feeling, because so few people end up doing what you did over and over again and what, for example, he did and what Brady will do.
Well, you know, it's funny, because you hear a lot of athletes talk about like getting that pinnacle, like going to the Olympic Games or winning a gold medal or winning a Super Bowl, you know, national champion or whatever. But you know, you get to that level and you have so much endorphins and so much going on that you actually hit a low. And there are a lot of athletes that go through depression after,
especially
that,
after the Olympics. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like, what next now? You know, like, I mean, nothing will ever top this. And so you have to try to keep busy. And I think the hardest thing probably for Brady was not going out on top. You know, even though we all think he was on top, but for him and his mind,
8-9 last year, losing
exactly,
last game.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that's probably pretty tough for him too. And you saw the emotions when he put that, you know, video out about retiring. It was just very raw, and you can see how emotional he was. And you don't see him get that emotional on that side with like tears and stuff.
So, do you ever get back in the pool? Do you ever swim hard like you used to?
You know, I don't. And people ask me, like, well, what do you do to cope? Like, you're so competitive. I'm like, don't get near me on a road. But, you know, you just channel it in different ways. I mean, it's never going to be the same, but you just try to channel it in different ways.
But the fitness seems to be your passion now.
Are you saying I look good?
I'm saying, yeah, you look unbelievably good. I mean, check out. There you are.
I can't see you. There.
Look at those arms.
I got some guns, huh?
All right. Eric, is that bigger than yours or not? Pretty much, absolutely. So, Dara Torres, go. Where do we get the Can I Wellness?
The Can I Wellness, you can get either on Amazon or you can go to their
CanIWellness.com?
Yes, CanIWellness.com.
All right, and would I get a discount or do I have to pay full freight?
Oh, I'm going to get you some. You can have these that I brought,
I'll pay for them. Thanks, Dara. Awesome.
from the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, heard around the world. You know, we got a lot going on today. And, of course, you had this weekend in the Northeast. You know, it was brutal on Saturday and on Sunday was totally great. And today and the next 2 days is totally great. I like this. But, of course, all the green activists are saying, shut off your gas oven. And this is the reason there's climate change and we need a new green agenda. We'll talk a lot about that and so much more. This hour, we're going to be joined by Brett Baer. You know Brett and Jonathan Ward, a great friend of the show, author of China's Vision of Victory. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
These numbers really stand out to me, right? 6 in 10 Americans say they would be disappointed or even angry if he wins again. That is more than the just 56% that have a negative response to Trump winning. So the president has to make a compelling argument.
You think? He's got to start sometime. That is Mary Bruce of ABC 2024. The obstacles remain for Joe Biden. Headwinds are out there. Guess where they're coming from? The left. GOPers are more comfortable than ever criticizing Donald Trump, but he is still winning in the latest poll.
Number two.
Do you want him to run again? I mean, you saw our poll. A large number of Democrats say they don't want him to run again.
He is an absolutely historically successful president, and I want to see that continue.
Yes, let's see that continue. An historic president, State of the Union, a day before the address, what the numbers say. What do you think, what do they think the, in reality, they're diametrically opposed to what you might think and what the president thinks of his numbers and his performance. We're going to look at what they mean for him.
Number one.
Letting a Chinese surveillance balloon lazily drift over America is like seeing a robber on your front porch and inviting him in, showing him where you keep your safe, where you keep your guns, where your children sleep at night, and then politely asking him to leave.
Blowback on blowing up the China balloon. What were they up to, and why did the Pentagon wait until Saturday to blow it up? And why does this administration invoke Trump every time they get in trouble? Let's bring in Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory. Jonathan, was this intentional? Did this go like China planned?
Hi, Brian. Well, it's still early to tell, and I think there are a few theories about it. I mean, as the Wall Street Journal said, it's worse if the PLA floated this thing in order to scuttle the visit by Secretary Blinken. But then, you know, if the Politburo itself approved it, I mean, that shows that they're testing our weaknesses. So, I mean, that's, I think, one seriously viable take here. I mean, we don't really know exactly why they would do this. I mean, it obviously disrupted the Blinken visit, which was meant to, on some level, reset relations. I mean, I don't think we're going to have a reset in relations with communist China. I mean, at this point, we have to turn the page on that and move towards a containment strategy. But bottom line, I mean, they felt that they could get away with this, however it happened, and to do something that, you know, floats above the country to the point that all kinds of people can see it. I mean, it really puts the China problem and challenge right into our faces here. And for those of us that have been looking at it from many other dimensions, whether it's the CCP preparing for conflict with the U.S., whether it's the level of intellectual property theft, you know, the building of essentially an economic empire that spans the globe at this point, you know, we have a major problem to deal with. And this seems to be just a brazen approach to, you know, how they're going to deal with us. I mean, a very big lack of respect.
I mean, there's so many questions. For example, they were in control of that balloon up until it was blown up. So they chose to zigzag through military sites, even though we were putting it on 24/7 on Fox anyway, and then blew it up right when it got over the water. So they had a chance to maybe bring it out to sea and bring it home, and we'll see what happens. But instead, they seem to have finished the mission. Here's what Marco Rubio said, waiting to get debriefed as a member of the Gang of Eight. Cut one.
It's not a coincidence that this happens leading up to the State of the Union address, leading up to Blinken's visit to China. The Chinese knew that this was going to be spotted. They knew that we were going to have to react to it. They flew it over military installations and sensitive sites across, right across the middle. I mean, look at the flight path of this thing. It's a diagonal shot right through the middle of the continental United States. And the message embedded in this to the world is, we can fly a balloon. over airspace of the United States of America, and they won't be able to do anything about it to stop us. They calculated this carefully with a message embedded in it, and I think that's the part we can't forget here. It's not just the balloon. It's the message they're trying to send the world that we can do whatever we want and America can't stop us.
Spent a few minutes over the Aleutian Islands off Alaska after taking off on January 21st. So 7 days later, it's on American territory. Then it goes down the coast of Canada. Then Biden finds out it's in Montana. A local journalist picks it up, a photojournalist. They contact NORAD. Billings, Montana starts running with it. People start spotting it. And then it becomes a national story. And then President Biden says, let's just blow it up. His military says, let's just wait. How does China interpret the delay? Now, we don't know for sure yet, but from all the research you've done on that administration, what do you think?
Well, look, I think that what the military is saying is that the ability to shut this thing off and, decrease or eliminate its surveillance capability is one thing. But then to take it out and, you know, wait for it to go across the country, let's not forget, this is also a provocation. And I think that it's them looking at how we respond to things. I mean, how do we respond to this kind of, provocation that really does go right across our country, and they also have a narrative that the U.S. is in permanent decline, and that's what they're going to tell their own people. And furthermore, shooting it down provides a justification, I think, and this is the dangerous part. If they were to choose to shoot down one of our, some of our surveillance capabilities, let's say over the Southeast China Sea or something of that nature in the Taiwan Straits, I think they're going to be able to spin this back to their people about their response to an overreaction from the United States. So we have to remember this is just as much about what they're going to tell their own population, which, is fed a sort of constant stream of anti-American nationalist rhetoric by the party.
I get it. Jonathan, you're saying that they're going to say, well, if they take a shot at one of our spy planes, if they take a shot even in international waters like they did with the when they forced that plane down under the Bush administration, even they'll just say, look, we're just getting them back because they were way too aggressive against us. And here's this China's statement. The U.S. used force to attack our civilian unmanned ship, which is the obvious overreaction. We express solemn protests against this move by the U.S. side. The Chinese side has repeatedly informed the U.S. side of a verification that the airship is for civilian use and entered the U.S. due to force majeure. It was completely an accident. So leaving itself the opportunity to answer back. So you think they're setting us up to do something even more aggressive in their area?
I think that's definitely a possibility, Brian, because let's not forget they have active territorial disputes throughout Asia. They're preparing a military that's designed for conflict with us in those disputed areas. And, being able to tell their own country that we're aggressors. I mean, that's the entire narrative. And, so there's no way we can win that battle for hearts and minds, I think, from that standpoint. I mean, this is something they're trying to tell their country, that America is an aggressor and that, and at the same time that we're in decline and that they can win and that the future belongs to them. I mean, that's the narrative of the Communist Party of China. So something like this fits into that picture, I think, in a way that's very concerning.
Well, I mean, I want you to hear what the Secretary of Defense, former Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta said. He was with President Obama, Chief of Staff for President Clinton. Cut nine.
And I'm not sure that we should have allowed it to simply cross over the country, cross over what were obviously sensitive military sites. I don't see the logic of that. So the question obviously is, Pentagon said that there were risks here. I understand that argument, there were debris risks. At the same time, I think we should have acted earlier if our suspicions were valid that this was, in fact, on an intelligence mission.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing. We don't know everything. They say we're able to pick up some intelligence by watching them maneuver. They have big antennas outside of this. Clearly, it was being operated by somebody somewhere, probably China and mainland China. But we were gaining from that. But the communication for here wasn't there yet. Looking at China right now, are they really that strong? We know how they're responding from COVID. We know they're getting hit harder now than ever. We know the 20-somethings or the unemployment is through the roof. And we know the whole concept of a market economy on any level is almost a thing of the past. Does that show strength to you?
Well, look, I think they're potentially headed into a period of weakness, but they've already established themselves as a major economic power. We've never seen a rival like this, not in 100 years. So they have all that. I mean, they dominate global trade. Their corporations are active all around the planet. They've stolen trillions worth of U.S. intellectual property and basically established markets around the world with that. And, you know, they've built up a very formidable military. So none of that changes the fact that they're a major rival, and they're still projected to grow at 4 to 5% for the rest of this decade. So, you know, and versus our economic growth, which is, I mean, we, you know, people are still debating whether or not we'll have a recession this year. So I think none of that is going to be an easy game for us. And that's why we have to focus on winning the economic long game. I mean, it is possible. There's a very genuine chance of military conflict with China in the 2020s, and that could come sooner rather than later. So we have to do the best we can to deter that, but also begin to win the economic long game. And that means taking apart their position as a global economic power. So we're going to have to play a game for economic dominance that spans the entire planet.
But Jonathan, a lot of people listening right now go, really? We couldn't do that to Russia. There's always going to be people breaking. Now, if we pull Nike and the Apples and these major corporations stop investing and we move all that manufacturing out, which, by the way, I understand is happening, and the CHIPS Act and things to that nature, that'll make an impact. But you have a small economy in comparison like Russia, and we're still watching their GDP. They're almost unaffected by sanctions.
Well, I think we were able to destabilize their economy for sure. The Fortune 500 left that country, and you know, basically the Chinese have stepped in and stabilized it. That's the problem, is you really have Chinese companies staying in Russia, and they've increased their volume of trade with Russia. So again, I mean, the Chinese Communist Party is behind Putin's war in Ukraine, and we're not calling them on that. I mean, the minute we decide to start even just going after the Chinese corporations that are propping up the Russian regime, I mean, that's a bit of a game changer. So we haven't started this game, and we need to, you know, this is all about what does America do? It's no longer in my mind about what does China do. I mean, that's predictable. You know, we understand their strategy, their objectives, their capabilities. It's do we have the will to act? And that's where we need to go. And, you know, my new book, which comes out in April, is about this, the decisive decade, and what America really needs to do to win this contest. Because there's so much, Brian, that we can get done.
Well, I mean, number one, we got to stop them from buying up our boarding schools, buying up our key real estate in areas, especially around military sites. Huawei cannot seem to exist. And the best we can, we got to incentivize management or demand management, pull manufacturing out of that country, especially vital things like pharmaceuticals, don't you think? And chips.
And this, it has to come from shareholders. It has to come from Wall Street. At the end of the day, the corporate boards and C-suites, I mean, they're incentivized to grow in China, to continue allocating capital to China. The U.S. government is not moving sufficiently to stop that. And at the end of the day, I mean, these companies are exposed. I mean, the exposure of our corporate sector to China is just – it's too much. And it's an enormous problem, and I think you know, our business leaders aren't solving it yet. So that's going to take a whole of nation approach. I mean, not just from the federal government, but from the state governments and from the general public, and also from Wall Street and shareholders. I mean, a lot of this is pension money that's going into companies that are becoming China stocks. I mean, if you're Nike, if you're Apple, if you're Starbucks, then you're a China stock. And that's just, you know, that's not good for them, and it's not good for America. We've got to, you know, really have everybody reverse course so that we start rebuilding this country. We rebuild our industrial base, our manufacturing. I mean, we have a tremendous advantage in capital and productivity that needs to be deployed towards strategic purposes. And that's the only path we've got, Brian, towards return to peace through strength. And even there, the window is closing. But you have to get into a virtuous economic cycle where we are rebuilding our country in order to rebuild our military.
But it seems, and Jonathan, I hope people listen to you, but, you know, we are focused now on the green economy. We want to incentivize, doesn't matter what China does, as long as they buy solar panels. Meanwhile, they're closing up the market when it comes to rare earth and solar panels.
Well, they dominate those industries. I mean, those are the industries that they selected and targeted with their long-term industrial policies, and that's made good. I mean, we can say whatever we want about, you know, capitalism and communism, but the bottom line, they do long-term strategy and we don't. And we will not lose a game where it's their long-term thinking against our short-term thinking, whatever our great advantages might be. So we're going to have to get into that game of basically winning long-term economic games in the key strategic industries all around the world. And we can beat them at that. At the end of the day, you do want capitalism and free enterprise to beat the People's Republic of China, but we've got to stop selling them the rope.
Yeah, and I just do think that Republicans and Democrats see this, the ones that aren't compromised. All right, look forward to your book. It's called The Decisive Decade, American Grand Strategy for Triumph Over China. Jonathan Ward, thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, listen, we gave you a lot, 1-866-408-7669. And we are, the other big story is immigration. Over the weekend, we saw the mayor of New York City go into this Brooklyn terminal and sleep on a cot with other illegal immigrants, play ping pong, play video games, watch flat screens, have breakfast. Guess what? He's okay. These illegal immigrants who are protesting, refusing to go in, whose activists are aggravating this situation, and not only do they come off as ingrates and lose any type of support, they are actually making things up about dire conditions. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You can come and try to take it, Joe, but we ain't going anywhere. New Hampshire will be
But if
first.
The Democrats don't show up, they don't
So here's the amazing dynamic. First, South Carolina is a terrible place to put the primary because they get about 15% voter turnout, like New Hampshire sets records on it. In 2020, think about this, President Trump didn't even have a primary. The elitist powers that be basically said, well, Trump's our nominee, right? No one's challenging him. No primary in South Carolina. And they're going to do that again for the Democrats. So what Biden has effectively done is said, we're going to move the first of the nation primary from New Hampshire to South Carolina. And by the way, they're probably not even going to hold a primary for me. Mm-hmm. So what happens? It means anyone who wants to challenge Biden, and there will be more than a few, they're coming to New Hampshire. And we're going to have our voting first, whether they seat the delegates or not. We don't care. The press will be there. The excitement will be there. The energy will be there. The Republicans will be there. And the Democrats who want to challenge Biden will be there and be given an open lane to do so. It's going to be a wild dynamic.
So look, the Democrats have screwed up their last two caucus cycles, and it's been a joke. They couldn't even pick out a winner. I don't even know who eventually won. They screwed it up with John Edwards 1 year, too. So I understand them being a little down on Iowa. Not that I don't have anything negative to say about Iowa, but their caucus, the Democratic caucus or the Democratic Party in Iowa is absolutely seems to be totally disorganized. In New Hampshire, it comes off fine. The problem with New Hampshire is nobody likes Joe Biden there. Elizabeth Warren did terrible there. So the only other person I could see getting into it maybe would be Elizabeth Warren as she runs for Senate. Maybe if she has some momentum, feels as though she could change things and be more effective. So who does good there? Pete Buttigieg does good there. So the president says, I just want to go to South Carolina, a state he will not win, but he just wants to get that early victory and then push everybody out and thinks it's a better composite of what the Democratic Party looks like. For the Republicans, they're totally happy in New Hampshire. They're going to go through the process in Iowa. They're going to keep things as they are. But we are talking about a Democrat party that has an incumbent that says that he is responsible for the economy doing well in this genius foreign policy. The average person does not feel that way. And that's why they are, at one point, could be really in trouble, because if we start going into a slowdown, at the very least, dare I say, recession, and Joe Biden.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
But I know what we're going to hear. We're going to hear him take credit for, you know, adding more jobs than ever before. After a pandemic, that wasn't very hard. He's going to kind of talk about, oh, we have unemployment finally coming down and inflation coming down. Well, inflation was at record high. Of course it's coming down. It couldn't have gone any higher. So look, the president's going to do what he does, try to take credit for all of this stuff.
Yeah, that was Governor Chris Sununu, who was really on his game yesterday, too, in hostile territory for him. But he was saying things. He kind of lets it fly, which it's kind of a relief in today's political climate. Brett Baer, chief political anchor of Fox News and anchor of Special Report. With Brett Baer, weeknights at 6, and fresh off a great golf tournament. Brett, how did you do at Pebble Beach?
Hey, Brian. It was windy and wet and cold, but I made the cut, which was good. We came in, I think, 15th, but top 25. I made the cut umbrella. Problem was, because of the weather, we didn't get to play the final day with the pros at Pebble Beach, which they're finishing this morning, actually. But it was a lot of fun. It's one of those
dream things to be able to play, but it was heinous weather-wise.
Horrible, right? Oh, that's, I'll tell you, it was zero in New York, so I don't think you had zero, but...
You don't feel for me. Yeah.
Right. But I will say, Brett, are you concerned you're going to get so good you don't need TV anymore?
I promise you, after some of the shots I hit, there's no doubt that I'll be back in the
really? Because the studio, yeah. But if you start winning this thing, would you downgrade and just be a contributor and focus just on your game? Have you thought about this?
No, I have not. This is a AM status thing every once in a while.
All right, so what do you think every about on the other job? What do you think about what Sununu said?
Well, I think he's, you know, staking out a position. I actually think Governor Sununu is going to run for president, and he's positioning himself for that. He makes a fair point about, you know, bouncing back from COVID and, you know, the numbers.
Yeah.
I do think that the administration has, you know, a little bit of wind at its back, that it's not, does not look like this is an economy that's, you know, taking a dive into a recession. People are still feeling it at home, and it's still, inflation is still a major problem. But as far as, you know, the dire predictions, I think the administration has something to stand on there.
But you know what's amazing, Brett? These polls are hideous. The Fox News
yeah,
poll, the ABC poll, Washington Post poll, the CBS poll. He has a 41%, 42% approval rating with the ABC poll, 67% an NBC poll, uncomfortable with him running again, 32% an NBC poll, enthusiastic about him running. He says a 45% approval there. But even though the economic numbers were as strong as they were, jobs anyway, the economy, he only gets a 36% approval on the economy, 41% on foreign policy. So he might feel good about it, but it's obvious across three polls, the American people don't feel good about it. Do you think this resonates with them?
Here's the thing.
Yep.
The thing is that, you know, we saw these polls heading into the midterms. And, you know, for a number of different reasons, the midterms turned out the way they did. But I think Biden and his administration is looking at those midterms as the true bellwether. They're not looking at these polls but they probably should, because I think it has more to do about his communication style, his ability to connect, his, you know, saying, you know, touching the right issues as far as what he focuses on. And then I don't think the classified documents, you know, 3 week story helped his cause either.
You know, it's amazing. They got to give a briefing on the classified documents now, but they've committed to do it on Biden, Pence and Trump. All of a sudden, oh, after the Chinese balloon story, suddenly they're open to giving a rundown of what really happened with these documents and how these FBI investigations went by the board, like November 15th
yeah.
one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they were holding off on that. And either the relevant committees, the intel committees, wanted that for a long time. All the way back to the beginning. And so, yeah, listen, I think the Chinese balloon story is not a good one for Biden. They're trying to portray it as, you know, some kind of leadership thing that he had said shoot it down on Wednesday, but then the thing floated across the continental United States until Friday. So the whole thing is not – there's a lot of questions to be answered about that.
I would think so. And a couple of things. It's obviously Republicans were like, why didn't we shoot it down earlier? That's maybe not news. But when Leon Panetta comes out and says we should have shot it down earlier, that's significant. Here's Admiral Mullen was on with this week with George Stephanopoulos with Jonathan Carlo. Listen to this. Cut 10.
I think strategically this really damages a relationship between us and China, further damages, which was deteriorating. And I think that's really the big part of this. I would, and I think the senator, you know, he keeps talking about they, which I understand. But one of the questions is whether the right hand knew what the left hand was doing inside China. And quite frankly, not dissimilar to when Bob Gates was in China about a decade ago, visiting, I mean, literally sitting with the president, where the PLA tested a stealth aircraft. And by all reports, Hu Jintao didn't know anything about it. So I think that's a big question.
So the suggestion this could have been done by elements within the Chinese military to intentionally disrupt this visit by the Secretary of State.
Clearly. I think that's the case.
That's a niche theory on that. Is that one you've heard?
Yeah, I have heard that. But, I mean, okay. You know, one side inside China and wants to make the other side look bad. I guess you could play that. The bottom line is that you have these spy balloons flying across the United States. And, you know, China is out with a statement, a press statement, and a person answering questions in Beijing saying it was a weather balloon. Well, no, it's not. And there's another one in Latin America. And, you know, there was one off the coast of Hawaii. You know, this is not something that is their Chinese weather channel that they need. This is an effort to get intel, and it's you know, disconcerting. I don't think a lot of Americans thought that that's something that they would see, some foreign government flying something, floating something over their airspace.
Couple of things to this. Number one, I think there's a lot of facts behind the fact that we probably never would have learned about it. Secretary of State Blinken still goes over there. If the people of Montana don't spot it, if a photojournalist doesn't take pictures, Cole NORAD himself, they said they're scrambling for information. Next thing you know, Fox is covering it as it transfixes the country for five, 6 days.
We had the only camera.
Yeah. So we did. It was unbelievable. And then we watch it blow up, and we're the only one to witness it. But if that didn't happen, it's not as if the administration would have handled things the same had the public not known about it. We still haven't gotten an explanation from the president, except for he wanted to shoot it down Wednesday. Then we hear this other report, which I think is worth pursuing, that the three times this happened during the Trump years. So everyone contacted Trump. People say, really? I had Mike Pompeo on Saturday. He's like, I don't know anything about it. I'm going to talk to people. He said it off camera. He's like, I never hear anything about it. He was CIA director. So Robert O'Brien, Mike Pompeo, John Bolton, President Trump, among the people who said, we knew nothing about this. Mike Waltz just said on our channel, he said that more than likely there's some speculation that the Pentagon deliberately did not tell Trump another spy balloon is because they thought Trump would be too provocative and aggressive. General Mattis was the defense secretary at the time. I mean, these are all possibilities. But how do you have an undetected balloon that you're now admitting was detected? I can't get my head around this.
No, and the best was that, you know, the left grabbed onto this New York Times story saying, see, Trump had them too. And you had Defense Secretary Mark Esper saying, I have no knowledge of this. Now, Esper is not a Trump loyalist. You know, he's been very critical of the former president, as have others like John Bolton. He said that in his term as national security advisor and anything that he heard before it, he had never heard of this happening. And, you know, you had people coming out of the woodwork. So, yeah, I think that that's a storyline to pursue. One way is bad, which is the Pentagon not telling the president because they're worried that he's going to do something provocative. And the other way is bad, too. We just didn't say anything because these Chinese balloons are flying across the U.S.
Rick Grinnell said, I did one of the biggest intel deep dives in China. They're spying in the origins of COVID. It never came up. If a balloon had come up, we would have known. Someone in the intelligence community would have known, and it would have bubbled up to me to brief the president. But I do am heartened as an American that both sides see the peril with China. And we're seeing stories about them buying up boarding schools and private schools. We're seeing stories about them buying up land outside military facilities. We see them buying up farmland. And at one point, you would think we're going to have a comprehensive strategy to pull out of China, especially vital industries like pharmaceuticals, and push them out of our country, because we have to identify them as an enemy, because clearly they do us.
Yeah. I think that we're getting there. I think that companies that are doing business in China are self-selecting and slowly doing it on their own because they realize that some of their assets could be somehow nationalized in a back and forth of supply chain, you know, warfare, if you will. But I do think that the administration's lines have been not as firm. And that's one of the reasons why this committee up on Capitol Hill with Congressman Gallagher as the chair is going to probably look at a number of things that the U.S. should and could be doing to counter what is a Chinese threat.
Have you thought about your show tonight?
I have thought about it. I am back in the mix. We've got Brit Hume. We've got the two governors, Democrat and Republican, head of the governors' associations, which would be an interesting take on kind of what states are looking at. And obviously, we have a preview of the State of the Union tomorrow.
So how do we get your podcast, Brett?
And the podcast, you can get it on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. It's under the Brett Baer Podcast, and you have both the All-Star Panel and Common Ground to choose from. So we do two every week, and it's been good numbers, and it's been a lot of fun trying to get, you know, more that we do these things, Brian, the more left and right different perspectives come together to try to talk about what they're agreeing on first and then talk about what they disagree on.
That would be great. Brett Baer, fresh off a great display, making the cut at Pebble Beach, got a shirt. He dealt horrible conditions, but he's back ready for action in a controlled climate environment inside the studio in Washington, D.C. Brett, thanks so much.
We'll see you, Brett.
You got it. Hey, when we come back, it's your turn again. 1-866-408-7669. We'll get to your calls and find out if there's indeed more to know.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
A new study finds that despite women making less money than men, more single women in the U.S. own homes than single men, thanks to a phenomenon economists call divorce.
A school official in Illinois has been arrested on charges of stealing over $1 million worth of chicken wings. Said the official, "I swear, I was going to give all the money back."
All right, there you go. That was some of SNL on over the weekend. So you thought that was funny?
I was going to say we all laughed out loud when we heard that one.
Really?
Yes.
All right, let's find out if there's even more to know.
More to know. Sponsored by Unplugged. Reclaim your privacy from big tech snooping with Unplugged. Visit unplugged.com.
All right, here we go. Elon Musk starts the news. He tweets this out. Last 3 months were extremely tough. Had to save Twitter from bankruptcy while fulfilling essential Tesla and SpaceX duties. Wouldn't wish this pain on anyone. Twitter still has challenges, but is now trending to break even if we keep at it. Public support is much appreciated. Then he went on to say he was tired, but his back hurts. His mom wants him to get some sleep. He went on to say, "I had trouble sleeping last night, so unfortunately I'm not at my best." Later, Musk says, "I'm sorry for squirming around. I have some severe back pain." Yesterday, he says, "I'm worried about me too." So is he? Are you worried about him?
I mean, I feel like he might be the one man in America who works more than you.
Right. No, and he has much more consequence. I mean, literally billion-dollar companies all waiting for his lead. But didn't Twitter cut their prices and all of a sudden get a big surge in earnings?
I haven't been following their financials that closely, but I'll take your word for it. And also, according to his tweet, they're on track to break even, which is good.
Right. I don't know. I think it was Dave Rubin who went in there to meet with him. And he said, "If you want me to meet, if not, let's meet tomorrow." About how Dave Rubin was being shadow banned.
And he was so tired.
And he said he was so tired from the meeting. And then we know that he also flew out to Washington. He's friends with Kevin McCarthy. They were both in California, living kind of close to each other. And then he met with the Democrats, too, to let them know, "You can call me in, but this is what my approach is." I think it's very smart to do that.
No, I agree. Talk
and
to everyone.
He can fly private, right?
He might be able to afford it. I'm not sure. Only if Twitter breaks even can he afford it.
Right. Next, Beyonce broke the record for most awarded Grammy artist of all time last night with 32. Let's listen.
The Queen is officially in the building. Ladies and gentlemen, Beyonce Knowles. Thank you so much. I was shocked to find out that traffic could stop you. I thought you traveled through space and time, but I'm glad you could be with us right now.
But she did. She was late for her award because of traffic.
I mean, even Beyonce hits traffic in L.A.
I mean, don't you think somebody could make a call to say she's stuck in traffic, the Grammys are on?
I mean, maybe, or don't you think she could have just maybe left a little earlier?
That's true, too. She's tied with rapper-producer husband Jay-Z for most Grammy nominations ever, 88. The feat comes ahead of the anticipated Renaissance Tour. Are we all anticipating that tour?
I mean, I'm not planning on going to Ticketmaster for it, but if I had free tickets, I would definitely go. It'd be
Eric
a phenomenal
would
show.
Need somebody to go with. Next, surfer Bethany Hamilton speaks out against the new rule allowing transgender women to compete with females. She's against it.
This concerns me as a professional athlete that has been competing in the World Surf League
events for the past 15 plus years, and I feel that I must speak up and stand up for those in position that may feel that they cannot say something about this. I personally won't be competing in or supporting the World Surf League if this rule remains.
So right now, get this. This is the term. They made the rule that male-bodied individual known as transgender athletes can officially compete in the women's division of the World Surf League. She's famous for having one arm bitten off by a shark. So this is unbelievable that it's in this sport. So it's unbelievable that Dara Torres was telling us earlier, in an earlier part of the show, she can't believe men are competing against women, these transgender women.
Their bodies are completely different. They're developed in dealing with those huge
waves.
What
happened to the Me Too movement? Where are the women standing up for women? They're too scared to stand up to trans women.
I agree, sadly. I mean, most people would agree this is absolutely insane.
Fans so confused by Madonna's new face at the Grammys. Several fans took to social media, share the confusion over her face. The Vogue songstress, 64 years old, took the stage to introduce Kim Petraeus and Sam Smith for their unholy appearance when fans commented on her look, especially her face. Quote, "Me attempting to ignore the fact that Madonna has a whole new face." One fan tweeted, "What happened to Madonna's face?" Another fan tweeted, "Madonna looks good for her age. If her age is 2,700 and is a vampire, eats babies and small animals alive."
She was so puffed up.
Really? I didn't see it.
She used to have like really pretty, like angular face, and she just looked like a balloon. Her lips were huge.
Right. I mean, what's wrong being 64? 64 is the new 24.
64, you're still here. You're not dead. You should be happy.
You're not dead. That's good. I was trying to say that it's still young, and you say not dead.
The Will Cain Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Cain as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.